Tonight, the Republicans debate. Sponsored by today's TMJ4, WUWM, WIS Politics, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and USA Today Network. From the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, here are your moderators.
And good evening and welcome. I'm Charles Benson from today's TMJ4.
And I'm Shannon Sims from today's TMJ4. Thank you for joining us for tonight's U.S. Senate Republican candidate debate.
I'm Mitch Teich from WUWM. The primary is August 14th. Let's welcome two of the Senate candidates to the stage. We have political newcomer Kevin Nicholson. And State Senator Leah Buchmeier.
So you've already got your practice in. I wanted to let you know that was your one and only time to applaud the candidates. So welcome to both of you. Before we begin, though, you have a point you want to make.
Yes, we want to take a moment to recognize a tremendous tragedy that has happened in our community. Last night, a Milwaukee police officer was killed in the line of duty. Michael Mahowski was 17 years on the department. We want to take about 15 seconds and a moment of silence.
Our rules tonight are simple. Candidates have 60 seconds to respond to a question and 30 seconds to respond to a follow-up. If a candidate runs over, you'll hear this sound.
So, let's get to it. Who is the most conservative candidate to take on Senator Tammy Baldwin? A new NBC News Marist poll today shows your race very close, with 27% of likely voters still undecided. Mr. Nicholson, you'll get the first question. What makes you more conservative than your opponent?
Well, conservatism is the recognition that human life matters. We live in an imperfect world, and we have to strive to do everything we can to make people successful. We have to recognize the value of individual human life. We have to do everything we can to take the throttle and open it wide for everybody in this nation so they can move forward and achieve their dreams. Boy, if that doesn't encapsulate my service in the Marine Corps and everything I did to dedicate myself to the perseverance of our Constitution, my time in business solving problems to make sure that those businesses can be successful, and people can go forward and live out their dreams. Conservatism isn't just what we do in government or politics, and everybody here listening to me knows that. It's about living a full life. It's about so much of what de Tocqueville wrote about when he came to the United States of America and said that these people are deeply invested in their country and its future, from their church, from their home, on into the civic square. That's what it takes to live a full conservative life. I've done it, I've lived it, I'll continue to live it in the United States Senate as we drive solutions that our country desperately needs.
Thank you. Ms. Buchmeier, you'll have a minute now as well. What makes you more conservative than your opponent?
Well, thank you very much for sponsoring this debate this evening, and thank you, Kevin, as well. You know, I'm a mom with a cause who never thought I was gonna get into politics. But I questioned the role of government in my life when my daughter was in kindergarten. I questioned the teaching practices, and it started me on an odyssey of really understanding this amazing civic process that each and every single one of us has the opportunity to participate in, and I would argue the duty to participate in. I stood shoulder to shoulder with Governor Scott Walker as we broke the stranglehold of public sector unions. We stood for conservative ideas. I stand for those ideas. I stand for life. I stand for our Second Amendment, and most of all, I stand for our Constitution. These are our conservative ideas. Not only can I talk about them, but I can actually show you by my record, my proven, consistent track record, that I stand by those ideals and principles.
Mr. Nicholson, you've said that leading Marines in combat in two wars helped develop your conservative credentials. And if anyone questioned that, they needed to, quote, look inside themselves on what their conservative credentials were. Democratic Tammy Duckworth is a U.S. Senator from Illinois. She lost her legs fighting in the Iraq War. Patriotism has no party. So why should voters look at your record of serving our country as, quote, conservative credentials?
It's a good question. And I'll say this. I deeply respect Senator Duckworth's service to our country. And I've always said that, and I always will. That's true of every single veteran that's put their life on their line for their country. What I question is dedication to a political party, which has completely unmoored itself, and I'm talking about the Democrat Party, unmoored itself from our Constitution, which readily and oftentimes derides the Constitution that Senator Duckworth, among others, signed up to actually protect. What we have to do is think critically. That Constitution is what makes this nation exceptional. It basically says that your rights are given to you by God and that no government has the ability to interfere with it. That's what we sign up to serve, the Constitution. No politician, no political party. That dedication is critical to actually seeing that this republic persevere well into the future. So look, at the end of the day, I'm a conservative because I believe that that Constitution is exceptional. It has to be adhered to. We have to do everything we can to protect it and persevere it. I never see that coming from the Democrat Party, and that's why I question allegiance to that party.
Ms. Vukmir, you have said you are the proven conservative in this race. In 2012, though, you endorsed political newcomer Eric Hubde in the GOP Senate race over former Governor Tommy Thompson, who at the time, some argued, was then the proven conservative candidate that year. What do you think is different this time around for voters?
Well, I think that it's very important for people to know that the person who is going to go to Washington and stand with President Donald Trump and be that person who is going to follow through on the promises that were made, let's face it, that's what President Donald Trump has been doing. We need someone who has the experience, who's actually shown that they can follow through on their promises. I've done it here in Wisconsin. And when I think about Wisconsin Republicans, I think about the fact that we are pushing the edge every single time we get the opportunity. We have moved the conservative ball down the field. We are not establishment Republicans here in Wisconsin. We are activist Republicans. We know how to get things done. President Donald Trump needs a strong leader with a proven track record who's not going to buckle. I've been through the gauntlet here in Wisconsin when we had riots in that Capitol, when we walked in and out with armed security. I know how to get things done. I've withstood that pressure.
Just to follow up, do you think of yourself as an insider or an outsider?
Well, I consider myself an activist Republican who is continually pushing the edge and pushing our conservative agendas. You can talk to my colleagues and they will tell you that sometimes I'm a little bit of a pain in the neck. I know what it's like to brush up against my leadership, and I think it's important that we as Republicans continue to push our conservative agendas. You know, I think it's pretty fascinating that as Republicans, we don't always agree. And behind closed doors, we have really strong, important debates. I push that limit every chance I get.
Sounds like you're an insider with outsider tendencies.
You'll have 30 seconds for a response when we ask for a rebuttal. We're going to move along now to health care. And both of you have promised to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. Republicans, though, have failed multiple times to repeal the act. Do you believe health care is a privilege or a right? Ms. Vukmir, we'll start with you.
Health care is important for all individuals, absolutely. But the problem that has happened right now under Obamacare is that we have not created an affordable health care system. It is not a system that people are able to have access to. We're not promised our provider or insurance provider as was promised by President Obama. Look, we have a broken system in healthcare. What we need is to bring healthcare back to the states where we know how to do things. In Wisconsin, we took care of our neediest of needy. We took care of individuals who had pre-existing conditions before it was cool to take care of pre-existing conditions. We had an uninsured rate that was one of the lowest. We need an army of consumers with information and tools to make decisions about their health care. We need to unleash consumerism, bring it back to the states where we know how to solve the problems. That's how we will take care of our health care reform problems in Wisconsin and across the nation.
Mr. Nicholson.
You have a right to your life. Let's be clear, that's what the Constitution says. So healthcare is one of a series of services, just like you procure food or you buy healthcare, that you can go out and market and buy. And it helps your life, it helps your quality of life in so many different ways. Our Constitution, again, makes it clear, your life is your own. No government gets to impede on it. What we have to do now is make sure that healthcare is obtainable to people. Whatever choices they choose to make and how they procure healthcare, we cannot make them do this. But consumer choice, real consumer choice, price transparency, and real competition in healthcare is what it's going to take to actually drive down the cost of healthcare in the aggregate, not just for individuals, but for the federal government. You can't set these prices. Bernie Sanders and Tammy Baldwin cannot go out and decide what you need for healthcare. Boy, you can just look at the Tome of VA if you have any questions on Tammy Baldwin's inability to actually involve herself in your healthcare. The reality is this. Price transparency, consumer choice, and real honest ability to save money in healthcare savings accounts, that's what will actually drive down the cost of healthcare.
Thank you, Mr. Nicholson. Yep. Ms. Vukmir, Wisconsin Democracy Campaign's finance database showed that between 2001 and 2014, individuals affiliated with Anthem, Blue Cross, and Blue Shield were in the top five individual donors to your campaigns. How can you ensure Wisconsinites that you will go to Washington to represent them and not the special interest of the individual donors or industry PACs such as pharmaceutical company Eli Lilly?
You know, it's not surprising, I'm a nurse, that people look to me as a leader in understanding healthcare reform and issues involving healthcare. So it should not be a surprise that people who represent those industries look to me to be a voice. Now, just because somebody gives us a contribution, that doesn't mean that we follow through and do exactly everything they say. You know, this is what drives me nuts about politics and the fact that people are so cynical. A lot of times people send you contributions, and everyday citizens do as well, because they think and they know that you stand for the same beliefs that they do. And I think it's really important that, and I say this all the time, just because someone gives me a contribution, that doesn't mean I'm going to vote 100% with them. I have said that to them, and I think it's important that they know that. And most people in those industries know that I speak my mind. I do not hold back. And I will tell them when I agree with them, and I will tell them when I don't agree with them.
So tell me when you have disagreed with them. Do you have an example in a 30-second rebuttal?
Oh, absolutely. I can tell you one of the first budgets that I had to deal with when I was in the state assembly. And there was an item in the budget which was being pushed by an industry. A medical industry. I was receiving phone calls all the way up until the time we took a vote, and I said, no, it is too expensive. I don't believe it belongs in the budget, and I'm not going to be voting for it.
You know,
that's one of many examples.
Though.
Pardon?
Did they donate to your campaign?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson, looking at your plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, what would be in that plan to protect patients with pre-existing conditions or someone with a chronic medical condition? How would you ensure that health care for them would be affordable if they need it?
Great question. You hear this attack them all the time. It's a good question to ask, and it's a critical one to answer. Folks, let's talk about high-risk pools. The state of Wisconsin had this in effect before Obamacare. And it was basically a pool that those with pre-existing conditions could purchase health insurance in. And here's the key to it. It allowed people with pre-existing conditions to actually buy an insurance product. Now, there was a subsidy targeted to it. I think we can have a good conversation about what that subsidy should be and what makes it affordable. But the beauty of it is that it allows them to still buy health insurance, a risk mitigation tool that allows them to plan for the future and still take care of their health. Meanwhile, what Obamacare did, and here's one of the essential economic problems of the entire law, was it just said, we're going to charge everybody the same rate and basically destroy insurance companies' ability to adjust for risk. To be clear, Tammy Baldwin, I want people with pre-existing conditions to be able to buy health insurance, and you don't get to lie about it. But that means let's do this economically. Let's do it intelligently. Let's do it in a way that we don't bankrupt this country, and let's be smart about creating an actual healthcare economics that makes sense for the people of Wisconsin.
Just to follow up, is there any way to provide healthcare in this way, in such a way that the young and the well don't in some way subsidize the older and the less well?
Well, so high-risk pools are their own entity, and you have to have a pre-existing condition to be able to buy in that pool. And you would only want to buy in that pool if you have a pre-existing condition, as subsidy would be attached to it to make it affordable. Meanwhile, for the rest of us, we need to get market forces into healthcare. Folks, the reason that Cadillacs don't cost $5 million bucks is because none of you would buy them. If you actually knew the actual price, the price transparency of healthcare products and technology, you would make rational choices. If you were incentivized to save in healthcare savings accounts, you'd spend your money intelligently. That's what we need in healthcare for the rest of us.
All right, we're going to move on. President Trump has not endorsed either of you in this race. 86% of Wisconsin Republicans approve of his job performance in the latest Marquette poll. Here's my question for you. What would you push back on that the president has said or done? And what is his best accomplishment so far? Mr. Nicholson, we start with you.
Charles, thanks for the loaded question. I look at the president's agenda and I say it's a darn good one, and everyone in this room knows it. Look, tax reform policy, giving money back to the people of Wisconsin, flowing billions of dollars back into our country so it can be invested in companies that can grow, smart, pushing back on the Iran deal, a deal that Tammy Baldwin approved on that sent billions of dollars to a state sponsor of terror, smart of the president to pull back on that and go directly against Tammy Baldwin's wishes and actually put pressure back on the Iranian government. Opening up talks and an opportunity with the North Korean government to actually denuclearize that peninsula and stop that conflict, smart. It's an opportunity, it's not verified yet. Deregulatory efforts by the Trump administration. I get you asked your question in the negative context, but I say this is a good agenda. It's an agenda that's actually growing this country and it's creating opportunity for all people no matter what they look like. So I'm not gonna fall into the trap. The president's done good work and we should applaud him for it.
Mr. Nicholson, I'm not asking you to fall into a trap. I'm asking you to talk about, there are things that he has said and done, and even some people wonder, when will Republicans push back when they disagree on things? I mean, are there things that you have not agreed with him on?
If we're going to talk about the stylistic differences with the president, I mean, let's be honest, we're going to talk about what happened in Helsinki, right? Like, what I saw is the president kept an open line of communication with another foreign leader. But at the end of the day, the president did not offer billions of dollars to a state sponsor of terror like Barack Obama did. So I would appreciate some of the outrage I hear directed at the president, directed at previous leaders that have made substantial and real mistakes that actually cost lives.
What about at home diplomacy, though? Let's talk about Charlottesville. Is there anything that you see there in the way?
I think that any time that we see any instance of hatred in this country should be called out. We have to get past this instance where we're thinking about our skin color, our ethnicity, our religion, the things that separate us. I can only tell you how I live my life. I want to see this country build up in a way that everybody feels that they're a part of its promise and they can move forward and be successful. And that's my expectation for anybody that's in public service.
Ms. Fuchmayer, you'll have the same question. What would you push back on that has the president has said or done, and what do you think his best accomplishment is?
The liberal elite and the media want nothing more than to bring this president down. I want to see President Donald Trump succeed. When President Trump succeeds, America succeeds. He is standing for our country. He's doing exactly what he promised at election, that he is going to make America great again. And that's why we need strong leaders who are going to stand with him, people who know how to get it done here in Wisconsin, and people who will stand with him. I like the fact that he stands for people, who, nominees to our Constitution, to our Supreme Court, who honor and respect our Constitution. He's building our military. He's showing a strength, like Ronald Reagan, peace through strength. He is deregulating, taking rid and getting rid of onerous burdens on our businesses. It is exploding our economy. President Donald Trump is making America great again, and I'm going to stand with him.
And I understand that you do want to stand with him. We asked people not to do any applauding, so we'll hold to that rule. But you are there to represent the state of Wisconsin. And as you have said, you have stood up against Governor Walker on issues. What issue do you think you might stand up against President Trump?
I will always look at the people I represent. And when I think that there is a discrepancy between what is happening in the state of Wisconsin and what the president's doing, I will speak out.
Anything
people
so
know
far?
That about me. At this point, I am giving the president the latitude. For example, the question comes up a lot on tariffs, and you may be talking about that later.
That is going to be our next stop.
But at this point, I believe we need to give the president the time to negotiate. That's what he's known for. And I want to give him that benefit of the doubt.
You hit us right on the button right there with the tariffs. So let's get right into tariffs. Republican Senator Ron Johnson, he's angry over President Trump's trade war with our allies and the Trump administration's $12 billion aid package for farmers hurt by this current trade war. Quote, these are his words, this is becoming more and more like a Soviet type of economy here. Do you think President Trump's trade war is causing permanent damage to Wisconsin businesses and farmers? Ms. Vukmir, we'll start with you.
I respect Ron Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson, greatly. He's represented us very well. But I do believe, as I started to say earlier, that President Donald Trump is known for being a negotiator. And what we have seen so far is what he is doing is making a difference. Just this week, we see how things have changed with the EU. Now imagine if we can also have the same sorts of agreements with Mexico and Canada, and if all of these countries then are able to unite and put pressure on the real bad actor. The bad actor is China. China is eating our lunch. We have a $375 billion trade deficit with China. They are stealing our technologies. They are forcing our companies to turn over their trade secrets. It's wrong. President Donald Trump wants to fix that. He believes in free trade, but he believes in fair trade because he will always, always put America first. And that's what we need to give him the opportunity to do.
All due respect, the question is, though, do you believe that what is happening right now will have permanent damage to Wisconsin business owners and farmers?
I've been talking to business owners. I've been talking to farmers. I was just at the Farmer Appreciation Parade, and I had a lot of time talking with farmers. And the farmers are telling me that they are going to give this president an opportunity because they know that they need access to more markets, not fewer markets. So that is why I'm going to continue to listen to them, because that is something I'm used to doing. Nurses listen. So we listen to our patients. I listen to my constituents, and I will make sure that I always listen when we make the final decisions on how we move forward.
Another rebuttal here, 30 seconds, but as you know, Harley-Davidson already changing how they do business because of what's happened. Do you not see any potential damage there for a well-known Wisconsin company?
I will continue to speak to Harley. I will speak to members of our agricultural industry. We need these very important parts of our economy. But I think we have to give it some time. These things do take time, and we're already seeing that the president's negotiating skills have made a difference just with what has happened in the EU. So I want to give him a little bit more time. Again, he believes in free trade, as do I, but he believes in fair trade, and right now we haven't been getting fair trades for our country.
Thank you, Ms. Vukmir. Mr. Nicholson, the same question to you. Do you believe, again, that President Trump's trade war is causing permanent damage to Wisconsin business owners and farmers?
No, I do not believe that, because it is not. To be quite clear, and Charles, you asked the question, or you asked and basically said, you know, Harley's adapting its production mechanisms to, you know, what's happening currently with trade. Well, they've already done that. The reason they do assembly in places like India is because tariffs have been carved out in such a way to incentivize them to do production, not in Milwaukee. And we should talk about that, because so many professional politicians have allowed these tariffs to be imposed on American producers, both in agriculture and manufacturing. So, yes, our producers have found ways to be successful as best they can, given the limitations placed on them by the politicians in our own country. Now, those same politicians might stand up and say, well, hey, I'm all for free trade. Great, me too. Now let's do it. What the president is doing is saying to our trade partners, come back to the negotiating table and let's actually get to a world without tariffs. Clear as day, that is what is happening here. Now the question is this, and I'll bring it closer to home. Yeah, China's a problem, stealing IP, slapping tariffs, subsidizing industries. How about Canada? And the dairy farmers in our state know exactly what I'm talking about, because I'm talking to them. A 270% tariff slapped on Wisconsin dairy products in Canada is not acceptable.
I got to keep you down to the one-minute response.
The
but I have
button
a follow-up for
means
you.
Go faster, right?
No, means get it done. Again, Senator Ron Johnson had a roundtable with business owners and farmers here in the state of Wisconsin. And farmers told him that they have built relationships with many of the countries that are in this trade war that they have now lost. And those relationships were built over years' time. The question is, how do you repair that damage in being a negotiator to try to change the tariffs for China?
So this is a negotiation, to be sure. And in a negotiation, people will say all sorts of stuff. But our farmers and our producers will say they do want access to these markets. And look, we're going to be selling more soybeans into Europe now, because the EU is, in fact, coming back to the negotiation table and saying, you're right, we actually can't continue to get away with imposing these tariffs. They did get away with it for generations, imposing these things on professional politicians. Folks, common sense test. Who did it take to stop this nonsense? An outsider. And he needs an outsider reinforcing him in the U.S. Senate.
Ms. Buchmeier, you said you were just recently talking with farmers who may very well feel like they're caught in the middle. What do you tell them when they say, we originally supported the president, but we are worried now for our future?
I tell them that I will always be someone that will listen to them. It's something that I have done consistently in my role with my constituents. And I tell them that we need to have a continual dialogue and we need to hear. I want them to show me, and I will talk to them and continue to talk to them. Tell us exactly what is happening. How much longer can you go? When does this become a real problem for you? I was amazed at the farmers that I spoke to. They are in a wait and see mode. They really believe that President Donald Trump is listening to them and trying to get better, fairer deals for them. We know already the deficit and the problems we have with Canada with our dairy products. They want a better, fairer deal. And I'm going to work very hard to make sure that our president has the support that he needs. He needs the support of people who are going to say, you know what? You are a great businessman. That's what makes President Donald Trump so great. He has been the leader of companies. He knows exactly how to negotiate. He wrote the book, The Art of the Deal. We need to give him the opportunity to continue.
Thank you. Mr. Nicholson, I'm going to follow up with you. You once said to President Trump, I enjoy an outsider roughing up China. But as you know, this trade war is not just about China. It's also about our allies. You have suggested, let's just get rid of them, start over. How would you, dealing with China and our allies, is there a difference or is everybody start over with everybody?
Well, you heard me just mention Canada, and Canada is an ally, and I just want to say this. I fought alongside Canadians in Afghanistan. I have the utmost respect for the people of Canada, but I know that we can compete honestly and fairly with the people of Canada. I'm all for their farmers being able to compete with ours. I put my bet on the Wisconsin farmer because I know they're efficient and really good at what they do. But what I don't like is Canada being able to slap a 270% tariff on Wisconsin dairy products headed to Canada. Likewise, I don't like the fact that the Canadian government owns, in essence, the timber industry up there, subsidizes the production, dumps that lumber into our markets, and displaces the Wisconsin timber industry. I don't think that these are good outcomes for the people of Wisconsin. I am all for trade with the people of Canada, done in a respectful way so that they can compete with us too. But let's get rid of the tariffs. So, look, a negotiation, look, we're not going to redo all this in 1 second. It's going to take a series of conversations, and that's what the president's doing. Those in Washington that are losing their mind over this and, again, proclaiming themselves free traders, I wonder where they were 10, 20, or 30 years ago when they should have been pushing for free trade then.
So President Trump called the European Union a foe when it comes to trade. Do you agree?
I think he's negotiating with them, and I think that they're another entity that has to be dealt with. And look, at the end of the day, you've seen the EU come back to the negotiating table, and they're offering better terms to the people of Wisconsin. That's a good thing, and let's move forward now and continue to trade with them without tariffs.
We are going to move forward right now and change gears to talk about immigration. There are more than 7,000 DACA Dreamers who reside in Wisconsin as of today. Can you give a specific plan that you would propose as a member of the Senate that would provide a pathway to citizenship for those Dreamers? And we'll start with you, Mr. Nicholson.
This is a solvable problem. Only the political class doesn't get the answer. Yes, build a wall on the southern border to stop illegal immigration, and here's why, twofold. One, stop politicians like Tammy Baldwin from encouraging people to come here illegally and put their kids in danger. That's the first step. We should not have illegal immigration. We are a nation of laws. Then build a merit-based, economically sustainable program that accounts for those that were brought here as minors with no knowledge of the fact that they were breaking the law, and they can count against some of the numbers we have for new immigrants under that merit-based, economically sustainable system. What's that system look like? Those numbers should toggle up and down based on our unemployment figures, giving people an opportunity to come here legally so that people like Tammy Baldwin don't get to take advantage of them politically as cheap votes or cheap labor, and then give them an opportunity to pursue citizenship with a full understanding of both the rights and the responsibilities that come with American citizenship. Every right in our Bill of Rights is counterbalanced with responsibilities. Our republic succeeds when people understand both sides.
Ms. Buchmeier, can you give a specific plan that you would propose that would provide a pathway to citizenship?
Many of you know that I'm the daughter of Greek immigrants. My father came to this country from Greece in 1954. My mom was born here, but her parents were from Greece. So I guess I grew up in a big, fat Greek family. And I spent a childhood watching aunts and uncles come to this country, and they wanted to be a part of this amazing experiment called America. And I used to sit around the kitchen table helping them study for their naturalization and citizenship test. They went through a process. We are a nation of laws. We have to uphold that process. And this is why I stand so strongly with President Donald Trump when he says, first and foremost, build that wall. We cannot have any other conversation about DACA or any other parts of the immigration plan until we build the wall. Then we can talk about a process for those DACA residents. But it can't just be a wave of the wand. They must go through a process as every other legal immigrant has done to come to this country and enjoy the privileges of this country.
All due respect. But again, the question is a plan. I understand that you say first a wall, but we're asking specifics. Once we get over that hurdle, please tell us a plan you have for these DACA dreamers in a way for them to get a path to citizenship.
We have to have a pathway for them that doesn't just mean that we sign a way that they can do it. So I believe it's important. The reason I stress the wall so much is because we have to make sure that that is going to happen. Too many times people have been like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. What have they been saying? They've been saying to the president, we'll go in and we'll negotiate. And what did the president do? He said, I will give you DACA if you give me the wall. They walked out of the room. I have to know sincerely that people want to build that wall.
I'll leave it at that.
Once we do that, then we can start the process. And it is a process that they must go through.
All right. Mr. Nicholson, as you probably know, DACA dreamers have been allowed to serve in the military as a pathway to citizenship. I believe about 900 currently are serving. Do you believe DACA dreamers should be allowed to serve? And if so, should that be their pathway to citizenship?
We need to fix the entire system. We can't do this piecemeal. That is going to incentivize all the wrong behaviors. So start again. It is a process, and I'm going to be repetitive here, so forgive me, but build the wall to stop illegal immigration, and then we can put the fixes in place that would include everybody that falls under what you call DACA. But DACA, remember, is an illegal act. It is the deferred action on the part of the executive. The executive branch, and this is what you need senators to understand, does not have the right to deferred action on laws passed by the legislature. That's why we need more senators that are willing to stand up and call these things out, because they intellectually get it. This is why Ted Cruz and Mike Lee endorsed me. You need people there that will actually make the executive do what they're supposed to. But at the end of the day, those folks that you're referring to should actually be under the fix, which is put in place after we actually stop illegal immigration first. And that should apply to everybody in that category.
Ms. Vukmir, as you mentioned earlier in your response about your father immigrating here from Greece in the 1950s and the memories you had of your uncles also and your aunts later following, did your family not benefit from the current immigration law allowing U.S. citizens to sponsor relatives like your uncle and your aunt? How now should, or I should say, why now should others not be able to have that same benefit in the immigration reform?
My family went through a legal process, as so many people in this room have parents and grandparents who went through a legal process. And again, I hold very dear to that process, and that's why that wall needs to be built first. Then we can start talking about a merit-based system of bringing people into this country. And I think ultimately that's what most people want. As I've traveled around this great state of ours, people are frustrated that people are taking advantage of our poorest borders and coming across and participating in this great country and enjoying the privileges without going through a process to become Americans. I want to stand with those people. They are very outraged. The president stands for the calls for building that wall. I'm going to stand with him. Then we will fix the broken immigration system. You're talking about the legal system that my family came through. It is the illegal system that is broken and has to be fixed.
I'm talking specifically about the U.S. law that allows relatives to sponsor another relative into the country. That's what we're calling chain migration. The Trump administration wants to eliminate chain migration. Did your parents not have the same opportunity to use that U.S. law that is currently in place?
The times were different then. Right now, we have a situation where we have so many illegal immigrants in this country, and they're taking jobs away from Americans. And people are frustrated that they're bringing crime into this country. We know about MS-13 and the gangs that are coming. All of these things are really creating outrage in Americans. I've traveled every corner of the state. People are frustrated by that. I believe we have to have a system that is merit-based, and we have to really make sure that we're looking at that merit-based system as we first build the wall and then have a process to fix the broken immigration system.
Let's talk about the travel ban. Mr. Nicholson, what circumstances and evidence would you need to see in order to lift the travel ban for various Muslim nations?
Well, let's be clear. That wasn't just simply applied to Muslim nations. It was applied to war-torn nations that have high security threats. And so, look, I have fought in two wars. I can tell you right now that people that are leaving active war zones are leaving high-threat environments, and you don't know, because they don't always have good identification on them, who is actually coming across that border. So this is common sense, folks. When you have a war-torn nation, yes, we should be extremely careful about who we're allowing in from those war-torn nations. That's all that ban was. It was an intelligent step to say, let's take extra steps here to be very careful about who we're admitting into this nation. And let's be honest. Look at the threat that's been posed to our nation in 9/11 and elsewhere too. It's an asymmetrical threat. It can come over 1 to 5 to 10 to 15 people at a time, recoalesce here, and then pose real threats to the people of Wisconsin. So common sense would dictate that, yes, if somebody is coming from a war-torn nation, that we take extra care to make sure that we're admitting people that aren't going to pose a threat.
Ms. Vupair, same question.
Well, this is an issue, obviously, that's near and dear to my heart as the mother of a son in the military, United States Army, a first lieutenant. And I think it's really important. The issue of terrorism, we cannot forget. On 9/11, 3,000 innocent Americans were killed on our soil. It was plotted and planned in countries where there are safe havens, where they continue to plot and plan and try to bring down our American ideal. I applaud President Donald Trump for saying, you know what? I want to put America first. I don't want people coming into this country if they are going to be a threat to our security and a threat to our Americans. He is doing the right thing, and I stand with him, and we have to make sure that he is given the opportunity to look at things that we may not know about. We don't have all of that private information that he has, but I trust him that he is going to continue to make our country safe, because that is what he has always said that he wanted to do.
Okay, our next topic is reproductive rights. An NBC poll recently says 71% of voters believe a woman's right to an abortion should not be overturned. 63% in Wisconsin say it should be legal in all or most cases. As pro-life supporters, what do you think the law should be? Starting with Mr. Nicholson.
So let's start with personal beliefs. I believe that life begins at conception. I believe it is a gift from God. I believe that's both scientific and spiritually true. So life needs to be protected. Let's start with that. Now, if you're going to talk about the law, look, at the end of the day, my expectation, really what matters, as a U.S. senator, I can approve and move forward judges that are nominated, both for the federal court and the Supreme Court. My expectation for those judges, and I can't hold any kind of litmus test on them, but is that ultimately they understand the Constitution is a pro-life document. And it is, folks. It says in there, your rights are given to you by God. It does not say at what week that begins. It makes it clear. Scientifically and spiritually, I know that life begins at conception. So our Constitution makes it quite clear, every life counts. So I expect that that the judges that I will approve for, and this is important that people of Wisconsin understand this, are essentially understand that the Constitution is a pro-life document.
Ms. Vukmir, as a pro-life supporter, what do you think the law should read?
I have been 100% pro-life. It's kind of hard to be a nurse and not be pro-life when you spend your entire professional career saving lives. And I do remember very vividly holding a 24-week-old baby in my hands in a neonatal intensive care unit. And nothing gets me more upset to think that people think nothing more than to wipe that life away. It's wrong. This country is increasingly pro-life. Our state is increasingly pro-life. I will always stand for pro-life issues. I will stand for life, and I will stand for nominees to the Supreme Court who also will look to that Constitution, that document that upholds life as the reason that they will be confirmed. I'm not going to confirm someone who's going to think that the Constitution is subject to change at any whim. I will stand for life by confirming judicial nominees who uphold our Constitution. It's that simple.
Mr. Nicholson, at the 2000 Democratic Convention, you said a woman's right to choose must be protected. Did you write those words, and do you regret using them?
I, of course, regret using them. It doesn't make a difference if I wrote them or not. I was dumb enough to say them, and that's what really counts. And I have to own that, right? I was a 21-year-old know-it-all. And the reality is I supervised corporals in the Marine Corps that were 21 that were leading people in combat. So I knew better. I should have known better. But I wasn't raised in a pro-life family. I had to go and live life to figure this out. The reason that I'm endorsed by Wisconsin Right to Life, I have 100% rating from Pro-Life Wisconsin, I'm endorsed by Wisconsin Family Action Pact, is because my story is the story they want for our nation. They want people that weren't necessarily raised in pro-life homes to come to understand the importance of protecting innocent life. And I have come to that position as I've watched my own children born and understand these aren't choices, these are gifts from God. Understanding that I've seen innocent life thrown away in combat. These things sear you, they change you. And the pro-life movement wants to see that change. Now again, there's people running TV ads today trying to misrepresent my views on life. They're welcome to do it, but you should understand they're flying in the face of the mission of the pro-life movement.
We have to leave it there. Thank you. Ms. Vukmar, in your opening remarks at the Americans for Prosperity debate, you said that you joined the political arena because, quote unquote, you were concerned about the role of government in your family's life. Why do you believe, though, that the next Supreme Court justice should be the one that reverses Roe versus Wade, the lawful right for a woman to choose?
Those were your words, that I believe that they should be overturning Roe versus Wade. What we're talking about is electing people, confirming people to the Supreme Court who uphold the Constitution. It will be up to them. We can't ask them if they're going to do that. We can't put cases before them. But yes, I do support life. And I do want people who are in our Supreme Court as people who will look at the Constitution for what it is, and then I hope that they will interpret it to mean what I mean, that it stands for life. But that's different. You're talking about death and taking the life of a human being, a baby that's innocent. It's wrong. We are a country that cannot stand for death and murder. Why is it okay? We worry about murder everywhere else, but what about the unborn? What about that tiny innocent life? I will always stand for life. It is wrong, and we have to speak out against it, or we will not be a civilized society.
So for clarification, again, would you choose or confirm a Supreme Court justice who would overturn Roe versus Wade?
I will support a Supreme Court justice who stands for the Constitution, and I hope that that means that he will stand for life, because that is what is in that document. It's just that simple.
Now, our candidates will have a chance to ask the candidate next to them a question. They'll have 15 seconds to ask the question. The other candidate will have 60 seconds to respond. And Mr. Nicholson, let's begin with you. Do you have a question for Ms. Vukmir?
Sure. Do I need to ask you guys questions too? No? All right.
Not unless we're you and ask
the candidates. All right. Boy, okay. Well, Senator Vukmir, foreign relations matter. We both know this, and it plays an integral role in the United States Senate. Syria is a critical situation. My question for you is, what's at stake there, and what specific steps would you like to see the United States take in Syria?
Well, that's a great question, and obviously having a son in the Army, I'm very concerned about what happens. He's active duty, and he could deploy at any time. I think it is very serious and a very serious condition. We should not be sending our blood and our military into Syria if we know that there is a risk for our national security. If those safe havens are there and still exist, places where terrorists are trying to wreak havoc on our people in our country, we need to be taking them out, plain and simple. Once we know that there are no safe havens and there are no risks, then we do need to bring our troops home. And we have to allow then the regional powers to come in and stabilize the situation. We cannot be involved in infinite wars. Infinite wars are not good wars. And we have to think about our soldiers. We have to think about our people who are putting their lives on the line for our liberties every single day.
And just to clarify, so am I understanding correctly, you said that if our national security is at stake, you would support sending U.S. troops to Syria in that case?
Well, they're already there, and the president has talked about withdrawing them. He hasn't given a timeline, and I think it's really important that we give him the opportunity to make sure that those safe havens have been rooted out, because that is the risk that we have. You know, terrorism is the threat. Those countries and those groups want nothing more than to seek the annihilation of not only our country, but the principles that we stand for. And I'm not going to stand for that. And I want to make sure that area is safe. I have a son on the line. It means and matters a lot to me.
It is now your turn, Ms. Vukmir, to ask Mr. Nicholson a question. Again, 15 seconds for the question and 60 seconds to respond.
Well, thank you. Well, Kevin, repeatedly throughout this campaign, you have called me establishment. You have called me an insider. You have called me a member of the political class. All for standing with Governor Walker, for creating an economic miracle in the state, turning our state around. My question to you is Governor Walker part of the political class? Is he an insider? And does that make him someone that shouldn't be running for governor?
All right. Well, that's a good question, Leah. I think that Governor Walker is an outstanding governor. I think he's going to do a great job, and I think his innovations in this state that have brought so many folks to the state of Wisconsin, and we've seen so much growth, such low unemployment, are outstanding. Guess what? Governor Walker is not running for Senate, but you are. We need people running for the United States Senate that have lived a life outside the lines, that understand that the problems in Washington are outside the lines. $20 trillion in debt? Not a chance. We're probably closer to about $100 trillion in debt if you're honest about our healthcare obligations. These problems are seismic. They are war. They are whether or not this country will grow in the future and your children will grow up with opportunity or not. Look, from working on the range as a cowboy to fighting in wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to a business career that's taken me across the industry and had to deal with every single conceivable problem that you can think of, from being born into a family of Democrats and standing hard enough for my ideals that some members of my family have turned on me and my kids, I am that person that will go to Washington, kick down doors, and actually deliver solutions.
We're going to move on to education. We are on the campus of UW-Milwaukee. In June, the White House announced a proposal to merge education and labor departments into a Department of Education and Workforce. It would have to have Congress approval before moving on. Democrats have said the logic behind this proposal is painfully thin. Republicans say an overhaul is overdue. Mr. Nicholson, would you support that plan?
Say in the overhaul of?
Well, I mean, the Republicans are saying that there needs to be an overhaul. So the plan out there
is... I missed the beginning part of your question. The
so
overhaul...
The beginning part of the question is that the president has proposed merging the Department of Education with the Department of Labor and calling it the Department of Education and Workforce.
Understood. Okay. Apologies. So, look, here's what we honestly need to do, and what the president's trying to do is basically economize at the federal level. I think that's one good step and a good answer the president's put forward. Here's what really needs to happen. So many generations of Republicans have heard about the importance of downsizing and getting rid of the Department of Education. Great idea. I've never seen it actually done. That's why I like what the president's saying. Let's economize. What I'd like to see is the money actually left in your communities. That's the real key here, folks. What happens is the federal government collects your tax dollars. They go up to Washington. Some bureaucrat decides what kind of standards that they want to put in place so they can ship the money back to you only if you actually, whatever it is, Common Core, whatever, you jump through the hoop that they put in front of you. Then they'll send your money back to you. That makes no sense. It's not economic. It's not sensible. What I want to see in the first place is leave the money back in local communities. The president's proposal is one good step to do that, but what we really have to do is keep the funding back in the states to start off with and in local communities. That's what allows for real choice at home.
Ms. Vukmir.
Well, Well, education was the issue that got me started in this in the first place, so I'm very passionate about making sure that decisions about education are done as close to home as possible. That's why I trust parents to make the decisions. And you know, it's rather interesting. I put out a drain the swamp plan, and in that plan I said it would be nice if we brought agencies from Washington, D.C. down to the states. We have such duplication of services. We have a Department of Education and we have a Department of Public Instruction. And if we could get rid of some of that redundancy, we would be able to realize savings and be able to give that savings back to local communities to do the right thing that they believe that they need for their students. Local units of government know best how to take care of their students. Parents know best how to take care of their students. So we'll look at the specifics of exactly what this proposal is, but if the concept of federalism to me is something that I hold near and dear, bring the power back to the states. We know best how to take care of our own. Let us do it.
All right, we'll leave it at that.
Let us turn to the economy now. President Trump signed a Buy American, Hire American executive order in Kenosha recently. Senator Tammy Baldwin is calling on Republicans to pass her Made in America legislation requiring all federally funded infrastructure projects use U.S.-made steel, iron, and aluminum. Do you support that bill? Ms. Buchmeier.
This plays into the entire topic that we've been talking about earlier, about giving the president the opportunity to negotiate and make the right decisions based on the various industries and the various tariffs and the various countries that are trying to wreak havoc on our economy. So I will always look at anything and look at the specifics of that bill, but I want to make sure that whatever happens, we are giving our industries, our farmers, our manufacturers the opportunity to have more access to markets, not fewer access to markets. And I'm going to want to make sure that any proposal that is done is not going to economically disadvantage our country. I think we have to give President Donald Trump the opportunity to make those decisions and to see how this plays out. I will look at it very closely. But again, let's go back to the bigger issue of the trade wars. We need to get that settled. We need to make sure that other countries aren't eating our lunch as they currently are. And then we can start talking about more of those specifics.
By the way, the president did tell me he supports this idea. So let me ask you, I mean, this is supposed to be good for American businesses. Why would you have any sort of pause on whether or not you would back this?
Well, we're going to have to see exactly how that impact will have on not all of our business. We may not have the ability to do that. Some of the thresholds that will be put in there will make it incredibly difficult. So again, I'm going to look at things. I'm going to listen to all consumers. I'm going to listen to our constituents to make sure we're making the right decision. You're asking about specifics of a bill that I have not actually seen, and I think it's really important that you read a bill before you sign a bill or vote for a bill.
Mr. Nicholson.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So the president wants to see American companies be successful, and he's done all the right things to actually move that needle as far as he can on his own. Deregulatory efforts, putting in a tax reform act, which actually, again, lowered our corporate rates, flowed billions of dollars back into this country so that companies, whatever industry they're in, can reinvest in themselves and grow. And that the people of Wisconsin can reinvest in their families actually in real time. Tammy Baldwin fought all of that. So she puts her name on this bill and says she wants to see Buy American, but folks, it's for show. She runs ads with herself saying she likes cheese. I like cheese too. I'd like to see dairy farmers being able to sell into Canada without a 270% tariff. Let's talk about the real policy prescriptions that can actually drive growth. That's what the president has been right on at every single step. So is this, you know, one example where Tammy Baldwin wants to put her name on a piece of legislation that says Buy American? Yeah, that's what it is. Now let's talk about the larger prescription of what actually gets this economy moving. The president's doing it, and he's right to do it. Now what we need are senators that further understand you can't just do things for show, you got to do them for real.
Ms. Buchmeier, on the tax cuts, the president is talking about making them permanent and also looking at maybe lowering them again. Would you support... Let me ask you that again. Would you require any spending cuts before another tax cut?
Well, I think it's really important that we continue the growth that we've seen with the tax cuts. And as I've traveled around the state, people are thrilled that they have that extra $2,000 in their pockets. They don't look at it as though it is the breadcrumbs that some people would like to call it. So we need to continue. And of course, we have to have spending cuts. When I look at this last omnibus bill, $1.3 trillion omnibus bill, they blew the budget caps, the spending caps, by $138 million. It's ridiculous. We need to remember that we have a spending problem. We have to make sure that we're reining in our spending. We're holding the line on taxes as well. You know, families in their homes budget. They know how to solve their budgets. They know how to live within their means. We need to have people who are going to go to Washington and say, enough is enough. I've done that here in Wisconsin. I've been on the budget team. I know what it's like to look within and make sure that we are not spending more than we can. So I'm excited about the growth in our economy. All right.
Mr. Nicholson, spending cuts before another tax cut?
We need senators to actually understand the math of this whole issue. So our economy is about $19 trillion on an annualized basis. Our debt, we say, is $21 trillion. It's not true. It's far more than that if you really accurately size our healthcare obligations. And let's assume, again, like I said before, it could be anywhere from $80 to $100 trillion in debt. And our federal budget is about $4 trillion a year. So we don't actually have a tax revenue collection problem. We have a spending problem, a promise problem, where professional politicians keep making promises to you, the American people, and basically laying the obligations on future generations and creating an enormous debt. And they all figure they're gonna be gone before these problems hit, but boy, they're hitting really soon. Within the next decade or so, these bills are gonna come due in a way that it's really hard to calculate. So look, at the end of the day, what we need to do is understand that, yes, lower tax rates, broadly applied and consistent, actually encourage economic growth. It's through the growth of the economy that you see more revenue come into the federal government. This is proven and it's real, folks. Tax cuts help grow the economy so that people can actually plan accordingly and invest in themselves. That's how you get more revenue into the federal government.
Thank you, Mr. Nicholson. Yep. The final question for the night. Both of you have signed a unity pledge to support either candidate who wins the primary on August 14th. Mr. Nicholson, what has impressed you about Ms. Vukmir's campaign? And Ms. Vukmir, what has impressed you about Mr. Nicholson's campaign? We will start with Mr. Nicholson.
You only have 30 seconds on this one because we're running out of
time. The bell will sound.
Thank you for that reminder. Her determinedness in reminding the people of Wisconsin that I was once a Democrat has been very determined. But in all honesty, her love of her family and when I hear her speak about her son, I can tell that comes from the heart. And I understand that her love of him and his service is real, and I completely respect that.
Ms. Vukmir?
Well, I thank Kevin for his service, and I thank you for that compliment, and I know that it is heartfelt. And I'm impressed, Kevin, with your ability to reach to people and your sincerity about your service to our country. You know, that is so important. As somebody who's seen it through the eyes of my son, I think it's really important that we have strong leaders, people who put their lives on the line for us. You've done that, and you're carrying that through in your campaign, and I thank you for that.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us. The live television portion of our debate has now come to a close, but
the conversation does not stop here. We have another half hour on the radio and online where all five Republican candidates on the ballot for U.S. Senate will answer your questions.
So listen to WUWM 89.7.